Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. We are at the end of 2025 here. Just one UFC event left on the schedule Saturday at the UFC Apex, UFC Vegas 112. But the pay-per-views, the numbered events are done. UFC 323 was a good one last Saturday in Las Vegas. I was there, cage side for Piotr Jan's masterclass, taking the title from Merab Dvalishvili. That unfortunate end to the co-main event between Alexandre Pantoja and Joshua Van, a new champ crown there, and then a bunch of other notable results. I thought that was one of the better fight cards of the year and closes out the ESPN era. So that was a big moment, and I hope you all enjoyed it, enjoyed the show last week. I thought we had great breakdowns. Eddie Alvarez, Ayman Zahabi absolutely killed it. Appreciate their insights. And now we move forward to kind of look back. I guess it is the end of the year, as I said, and that means some end of year podcasts. And to kick it off on the 1 year anniversary of when we did this last time, Luke Thomas coming back to rank the UFC pay-per-views of 2025, the second annual edition of this. Look at that. We've been doing the show long enough to have a second annual edition of something. So that feels like a bit of a milestone. Appreciate all your support out there of the channel, of the podcast. It means a lot. And I think it's been a great year, but we certainly aren't done. Lots of great stuff to come. So yeah, Luke and I are going to rank the 13 numbered events, UFC 311 to UFC 323 over the course of this year, from best to worst. Curious to know what you all think of our list. Drop your thoughts in the comments, how yours stack up compared to that, and fun will be had by all. I really enjoyed the show with Luke. We talked about a whole bunch of stuff, including who is going to be the fighter of the year. We're probably going to have to do a vote on that like last year, as I mentioned to Luke. So sit back, enjoy this one. Thank you to everyone for the support. Please make sure to like, subscribe, comment, follow, share with a friend, all that different stuff. Let's keep pushing here and make this thing great. So I will take a quick break and be right back with Luke Thomas. We are back here on the Bonfire for a second annual edition of the UFC pay-per-view rankings, Luke. The show has now been around long enough to do a second annual, so I'm kind of proud of that. Appreciate you being back. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Happy to be back, and congrats on 2 years. I did it for you. How about
yes,
that?
Yes, you helped make this happen. Well, we've it was great last year, and I thought we definitely had to do this. I guess the last time we can call it a pay-per-view rankings, I guess. What do we have to do next year? Is it a numbered event ranking, since this is somewhat the end of pay-per-view now?
I hate the term PLE, but I guess
they use numbered event standard in their press release announcing the January fights. They didn't say PLE was nowhere in there. So
okay, all right, yeah, numbered events is preferred for me, but I guess we'll see how it all, you know, shakes out.
Yeah, it is interesting that this is, I guess, I don't feel it, because as far as I know, in Canada, we still have 2 years left on the Sportsnet deal, and they have, I believe, part of their deal is like, they sell the pay-per-views through their app and through their channel and stuff. And then obviously you can get it on linear pay-per-view here as well, and UFC Fight Pass. But yeah, it's interesting how to start 2026, you're going to ask Canadian fans to pay $160 for two back-to-back pay-per-views.
Wow. I haven't even realized that. And I think there's other markets that are still doing it. Yeah, there's a couple other markets that are doing some big ones too, some noteworthy ones. That can't last though, right? I mean, if you're a UFC fan, surely you'd be upset that the USA would have now this deal with Paramount, but yeah, it can't be far behind for any of these other markets. It's just they're stuck in these deals on the timeline. But I feel like it's all kind of headed in one direction anyway, you know?
Yeah, just wondering how long it'll take, and especially Mark Shapiro saying on the earnings call this week that half of the numbered events, pay-per-view events, are going to be on CBS, or at least that's their plan. So how do you do that as well? As you know, we get CBS up here, so I don't know, is that option just going to be eliminated for those cards? I really wonder.
Well, I mean, if dude, let's be honest, this is a $7.7 billion deal. Whatever, all respect to the Canadian market, which, you know, I love near and dear to my heart, the Canadians, salute, I love you guys down here, but this is chump change to them, whatever they're selling on these pay-per-views just in that market. I mean, it's not nothing, but it's not much. So I doubt that if they have to punt on half of them, I doubt they even care, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's true. What do you think of half those numbered events being on CBS if that actually works out? I mean, it's the only one we had kind of heard prior was the White House show. If they do that, Dana White said they'd be on there. But, you know, these first two are seemingly Paramount Plus exclusive.
Right.
But coming after that, they're going to maybe do six or so throughout the course of the year.
I mean, my thought is it really all depends, right? So it, certainly being on, I mean, you and I were around for some of the original MMA forays onto CBS and, you know, for all the good and bad that came with it. And then folks forget, remember Bellator had at least one event on CBS and it did okay in the ratings, but it didn't necessarily change their fortunes. To me, it's really going to depend. You know, we already have seen the night, but thank you, dear Jesus, the beginning of the 9 p.m. Again, they tried the 9 p.m. start on pay-per-views one time, remember that, and then rolled it back to 10 p.m., but now they're going 9 p.m. permanently. I think it's actually going to have to require them to get even earlier on a time slot, where they're going to have to really put a main event at a prime time kind of opportunity. And, of course, it's going to depend on who they have on the card as well. It's noteworthy that they made this announcement on CBS, and it was just Dana White in there. It wasn't even Dana White and the other fighters. And I think it kind of tells you who CBS, obviously they spotlight Dana White as a noteworthy figure, but they didn't even think to put some of those other elements in there. So it, to me, is going to be really about context, timing, card, that sort of thing. I can't say as a blanket experience, CBS confers, you know, just one thing.
Sure. What kind of promotion will they do for that, do you think? Or like what kind of resources do they have for that? Because we're sitting there at a bar on Friday night before UFC 323, whatever was on, I think it was basketball or something, and it's right there on the ticker, like the banner at the bottom corner there on ESPN. You know, that's very you know, accessible and there for everyone at the bars. Does CBS have that kind of, like, you know, just promotional power or mainstay that they can throw up on things that's to that level of eyeballs?
I mean, the big, so again, I used to work at CBS. I no longer do. I had a great run there. But what I would say is, from my experience having worked there relatively recently, the two big crown jewels in their portfolio in terms of the sports rights that they have, and again, this is obviously pre-UFC, which I would now add to that conversation, would be the NFL and then March Madness. These are the two things that they have other stuff certainly as well, but those are the two bigger ones, again, prior to UFC. To what extent can those assets be leveraged for the UFC? Both of them can, but they're a little bit, you know, obviously the NFL airs primarily on Sundays, not always. There is those NFL games, obviously, that go on CBS at times for the conference championships. These are going to be opportunities. We saw this, Mike, when they were on with Fox. You know, remember the first time they were announcing fights on Fox in the middle of these games that are for the NFL? It'll be a lot like that. But beyond that, as a sports apparatus, certainly your guess is as good as mine. I think this is going to be a bit of a challenge for the network, which does really well with the stuff that it has. But this deal kind of came together pretty quickly.
Yeah.
How they learn to promote those assets within that broader family that they have is going to be one of the core tasks.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it works over the long term. I mean, it seems like at least for this first card, they're trying. They, you know, do the fight announcements the way they did. They did the press conference on Friday before the ceremonial weigh-ins with, you know, these key fights.
Let me say this. Let me interrupt you if I can.
Please.
I think this is obviously goes without saying, but like, I know there's consternation about the nature of the main event, but fights as fights, they're phenomenal, number one. Number two, it's starting at 9 p.m., which I'm sorry is just an amazing thing for folks on the East Coast. In Europe, it gets a little bit of a reprieve there, you know, as well. And then three, again, for the U.S. fans and, you know, some other markets as well, you're not paying for this. Like, this is a good moment to be enthusiastic to start the year. There are other limiting factors, but, you know, I think they're doing a lot to stand out with this first big show.
I agree. And I mean, everything can be said about the matchmaking. We've, you know, had Dean Thomas on the show instantly reacting, talked to many people in Vegas. I know there's you know, belief Armin Sarukian should be in this interim title fight, and maybe Diego Lopez shouldn't have got the shot. But the overwhelming sentiment is like, we can't have a...
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Khamzat Chimaev, Dricus du Plessis, Islam Makhachev, Jack Della Maddalena type fight where it's just one-way dominance, maybe grappling. Like, they want to go with the most entertaining possible matchup here. The question is, how long is that going to prolong? Like, is this the new normal? Is that the goal for every card, or do they just not want, you know, to have a boring...
In fairness, they could have gotten that with Armin, though, right?
Pardon?
In fairness, they could have gotten that with Armin.
I agree.
He's not a trade-off.
Would you not say the percentage is higher with Gaethje and Paddy?
I mean, I don't, like I said, dude, I don't hate the fight as a fight. It's phenomenal. Or at least certainly should be pretty fun. Anyway, I just don't think it's a trade off. But I sort of get also that, you know, you've got, to the extent that it's relevant, you got an American headlining in the first card on this new network, which is primarily but not exclusively an American deal, at least for now. So, yeah, I get it. I certainly get it, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm just curious to see what this new era will hold, but we'll have many days to talk about that, Luke. We want to kind of put a bow here on 2025. First, final event here. I mean, of course, we have one more fight night, but this pay-per-view, what was your biggest takeaway from UFC 323? Was it, Piotr Jan in the main event? Was it the way the co-main ended? Something else? What was the thing that comes top of mind from that event?
I mean, the Jan story here, to me, seems like the biggest one by a considerable distance. Two things I want to say about it very quickly. One, someone else had figured this out, but he's basically the first UFC champion to have a belt, lose it, go on a 3-fight losing streak, and then reclaim the belt thereafter. That is, I mean, that is, you know as well as I do, once you lose a title, very few of the champions ever get it back. And when they do, it's usually very quickly. There's like an immediate fight, or, you know, there's not a lot of distance between the two. If it's an injury or something like that, this was almost 4 years. It was 3.5 years, pretty close to it anyway. That's just so remarkable. But the thing that really stands out to me, the second point is, I did a tape study on my Substack, and right after the fight on Saturday night, I thought to myself, because I had kind of wondered, like, what does it take to beat Merab when he was on this incredible streak? What do you have to do to beat him? And I thought what the answer was that you had to really put a huge emphasis on damage, even if that meant sometimes losing particular positions, like just kind of attacking him everywhere. And on Saturday night after the fight, I was like, well, that's not true. He turned in a defensive effort. Like, it was actually defense first, and then the offense takes care of itself. And then I rewatched it again, and actually that's not true either. I mean, yes, The stuffing of the takedowns was insane. He took him down 5 times. He only got taken down twice. Like, mind-blowing, right? But the true story of that fight is that Jan got absolutely right in his face, set the tone immediately, and had an answer because they prepped for it, for everything. It actually, I'm not going to say, Mike, it was good that he lost his title at age 29, but he was still in his prime when he came on the back end to reclaim it, rather than losing it at like 34, 35, and now you're just really in this age out territory. He was still able to make use of that prime, got right in his face, set the terms. One of the coolest, best stories around, for me anyway, a UFC champion reclaiming their belt. Absolutely magisterial.
Yeah, phenomenal. Piotr Jan is awesome. In that vein, only he had, 1,737 days between title reigns here. The only people with more, this one doesn't really count in my opinion, Randy Couture, 1,808. That's just at heavyweight. He won UFC titles at light heavyweight between then. So kind of a disqualifier in my opinion. And then number one probably will never be broken, 2,612 days, Carla Esparza.
Which, I mean,
she didn't defend the title either time. So like, and Jan didn't defend it the first time either, you know, so we'll see what he's able
to
do.
But here, like, but the difficulty for Jan.
Of course,
it's pretty, I mean,
it's not comparable.
It's barely the same sport, you know?
Yes. This is true. He is unreal. That was so cool to watch, and just especially see him doing that body work, and especially on the heels of Eddie Alvarez's breakdown that he had on the show last week. I mean, he was all in on that, and I was like, wow, he just executed perfectly. I'm sure, you know, not crediting him at all. They had their own game plan, but that was slick, man. And I think the other thing I wanted to talk about before we get into our event rankings was, like, obviously this was a tough loss for Merab, closes out the year, but like, did he lose his fighter of the year case here? Because I think if he didn't do this fight, just say didn't schedule, took the year off after the Sandhagen win, like, I think it's his. When you look at everyone else, three title defenses in the year, like, I think he would have a pretty firm case. And then what, he loses it just because he fought the one more time, I guess? I don't know. How do you look at it?
I have seen cases like McGregor when he went 2-1 in, I think, 2016, and then Lawler, I think, 2013-ish, 2014-ish.
People had Alex Pereira in the year he lost to Izzy and then came back and, you know, got his couple wins.
So it can be done, but typically here's the trajectory of that. So, for example, in the Lawler case, they lose at the beginning and then avenge it at the end. Mm-hmm. And this is not that. This is he just, not coasted, but, you know, he was cruising, let's say, through it, and then just kind of fell off at the end. To me, that feels different for an important reason. The other thing I think I would say is, as a rule, man, if you're a pound-for-pound guy, and you, I don't think Jan was in the top 15 pound-for-pound when he got the title taken from him.
No, he was not.
You deserve to not win Fight of the Year then. And I'm not saying that Jan's some scrub, quite the opposite, but as a general rule, if you're losing to guys outside of the rankings, and especially that thoroughly, you could argue that was 5-0. You absolutely can argue that was 5-0 Jan. That should disqualify you, in my judgment. But I understand there's a diversity of opinion on this. So, yeah.
Well, so who is it? This is my top five that I wrote out. Islam Makhachev, 2-0. Joshua Van, 4-0. I had Merab, 3-1. Waldo Cortez Acosta, 4-1. Piotr Jan, 2-1. And then I have noted this down here because I think we had the first hot take of the award season from Tom Aspinall saying that Ilya Topuria should get it off 1 2-minute fight. Don't agree with that one, but out of those names, who is it then?
Again, I don't think there's a slam dunk case as a consequence.
Yeah.
But Islam Makhachev reclaiming the top pound for pound spot. And I know that there are people who did not like that fight. And honestly, I argue less with MMA fans about what they should and shouldn't like these days. And if people didn't like it, cool. I understand. But for me, it was fucking awesome, and I loved it, and I loved not just what it symbolized, but like those guys, man, to watch people who are ahead of the game play it while their contemporaries are constantly playing catch up is a sight to behold. And they're running game like that, and that to me makes it arguably, I mean, this Jan one is a pretty good one too, but you know, the Islam win up against up a weight class and just beating the bags off of you know, JDM essentially, that's the best performance all year, probably. So, well, again, the Jan one actually is technically a little bit better, but because he went up a weight class, that's the difference, right?
Yeah, that's true. And of course, he had the win over Moicano in January, Islam did, short notice opponent, all that stuff. Not really his fault. He showed up for the fight and was ready to go, so you can't knock him too hard. And he finished it in the first round. So, what more can you really ask? But yeah, it's tough. Some people will say Joshua Van like had the fight of the year or one of the best fights of the year.
Yeah.
Very quick turnaround, but obviously the way he won the belt, if he had gone out there and like legit finished Pantoja, knocked him out, submit him, beat him over five rounds,
then that's that I would give it to him, because that would be amazing.
Makes it interesting,
but it's like, you know, I mean, he certainly didn't have a bad year. He had an amazing year, but the culmination of it is a little weird, isn't it? I mean,
same with Merab. Of course, Merab's a loss. You'd rather have the win than the loss, no matter how it came. But yeah, I just feel bad for the guy, because if he didn't do that fight on Saturday, which he absolutely did not have to do, he could have wrapped up his year and fought in March. Like, we're saying he's one of 7-8 fighters to ever defend the belt three times in a calendar year.
Yeah,
it's very special.
I mean, dude, think about Umar finishing off O'Malley and then nearly finishing, but essentially dominating Sandhagen. That's insane.
Yeah, and then he takes the Piotr Jan challenge. So I don't know, if we're saying like fighter of the year, who was the fightingest fighter of the year? Like,
I can appreciate that. I will say this for Van. You can pick him as Fighter of the Year if you want. If you don't, though, someone else brought this up to me. He's got to be Breakthrough Fighter of the Year, right? I mean,
yes.
To go from basically outside the rankings.
Unranked to champion. He's
yeah, me. I mean, that's crazy.
Doesn't happen. I think the only other person who's done that was Cody Garbrandt. So,
right.
Yeah.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
High bar there. Is there a case for Jan here to get it? The win over Marcus McGee, who was on a very strong run there. He derailed that and then comes in
and then
here.
Then Figueiredo, right?
That wasn't this year, I don't believe.
Yeah. No, that was... Oh, so he just the two and oh?
Just the two fights this year.
See, Islam beats that by going up in weight.
Yeah.
But honestly, that main event in terms of like who showed... just the most consistent high level of skill through a dynamic range of the sport, it's Piotr Jan. Like, Islam played a game that was purposely a little bit static, which is why there's been some people who didn't like it again, the whole thing. But that was a strategic choice that he was making. So fair enough, it was a smart play, but that's not a dynamic range of different possibilities. But that's what you get with Merab and Jan. And so to me, it sort of stands apart as like a just absolute apex elite level fighting.
Yeah, love it. And give Waldo Cortez Acosta his love. He's not going to get the nod from anyone, but like I thought he deserved at least like an honorable mention on this list. One of two guys to fight five times this year in the UFC.
I tell you what, he's sneaky athletic and he wants the smoke and he's sort of having a great moment. I you know, fair play to him, but heavyweight, bro, I'd just be lying to your audience if I told you I gave a fuck.
He's not getting the win, but he deserves some honorable mention shout and, you know, whoever does it, but we'll see. I need some more time to think about this. It is an interesting one. And again, I thought this was a wrap. I thought Merab was going to win, but I might have to bring back what I did last year, which was anonymously vote 100 people all around the industry for their choice for Fighter of the Year. And last year, because it was between Topuria and Pereira last year.
Yeah. And Poatan. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was very close. It ended up like 58-42 for Pereira. So we'll try that again. This episode of the Bonfire Podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. For all your UFC betting needs, use MyBookie. And for a first-time player bonus, use the code word BON, B-O-H-N. Whether it's straight bets, parlays, money lines, over-unders, and more, MyBookie has it all to enhance your UFC betting experience. Just one event left on the 2025 calendar, so your last chance to bet big using MyBookie. Anyways, Luke, let's put another bow on 2025 here with these pay-per-view rankings. Last year, we did best to worst. Let's go with that again. It was, I thought, pretty straightforward in terms of the top event last year. We both had UFC 300 at number one. Obviously, a phenomenal, memorable show. Still holds up in my memory more so than any other event last year. Like, I don't know if there's anything I think back to 2024 that stands out. So I guess that means we were right. This year, more competitive in my mind, for sure. We didn't have that seminal landmark fight card. Was putting this together your rankings more challenging or less challenging than
20? I think this was much more challenging and I really, really struggled. And I'll tell you why, which is the events all kind of did different things. Like there wasn't a lot of cases where you had a main event, a co-main event that, you know, let's say, mostly delivered. And also the cards looked similar, like the same parts of the card delivered in the same ways. And so now you're asking, okay, which one had more star power? You know, you could kind of have a more, right. You have to measure apples to apples to understand some of the differences. Yeah. Or similarities as well. And this one felt like, okay, this one had a great main event, but then a shit card. This one had a great card, but the main event was a dud. Or, you know, there was some, for example, 311, where, you know, there's Moicano. Like, how interesting is Makhachev versus Moicano? Not very, right? a fine fight, I guess. Like, you know, he dispatched him pretty quickly. So for those reasons, it was a little hard to like put some of this together, I felt like.
Yeah, and for the audience, and I hope you stuck with this because I don't think I specifically, we're just ranking the main card here. It's not the entirety of the prelims because that does change the dichotomy of everything. So we just wanted to stick with those five fight main cards that they had for pay-per-view and do it that way. So yeah, I found the top like eight really difficult. My bottom four were like, I thought more obvious and easier to put together. But yes, I'm very interested to see how it compares, Luke. I'll let you kick things off. What was your number one pay-per-view card of 2025?
All right. This is going to be, you know, this is going to be, oh man, how do I say this? There's no way that I'm going to have the most representative one. Okay. I'm picking along my interest level. All right. Okay.
That's totally right. Fair. Yeah. So I want to be clear. Your own rankings.
Now, with that in mind, I pay attention to things like star power and, you know, some of the size and the spectacle and the significance that I play that plays a role. But for that reason, while I grant that the co-main was the dud of all duds and it was the only thing really bringing down the card, honestly, 322 was my favorite event. This is the Makhachev JDM card, obviously.
Yep.
For me, watching him do that was so impressive. I loved that fight. I recognizing as a diversity of opinion, co-main event sucked, but then all the other breakout performances and just the bangers on that card and the, you know, the arrival of Morales and the list goes on and on. Honestly, that ruled to me. So it's not the perfect event, and there can definitely be some other choices. But I love that one.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you had a 16-second KO to kick off the main card by Benoit Saint-Denis. Another great knockout by Carlos Prachos, Michael Morales. Yeah, you get three performance of the night winners to kick off the main card. And then two title fights that were extremely dominant. And yeah, may not be the most exciting thing, but if you're into this to see the most high-level fighters, I mean, you can't really ask for much more high-level performances than what Islam Makhachev and Valentina gave us.
You took the words out of my mouth.
There you go. Well, since we're on him, and this is, we'll get to another Islam fight, but who do you think Islam's going to fight? Who's going to defend that belt first? Are we going to get this Kamaru Usman thing? I tried to put Ali on the spot as much as possible and be like,
what did Ali say? I missed that. What did Ali say?
I mean, his first thing he said, first of all, you have to understand Kamaru Usman is black. He's very athletic and he's like, he was just cracking jokes. It was funny. But he's, you know, saying no one has a bigger legacy. You know, he's the biggest pay-per-view draw of the fighters, everything he's kind of already written. He says he's going to, you know, push for his guy, which obviously you'd expect any manager to do, but that's not the one I want to see. That's for sure.
Yeah, that fight shouldn't happen, but it probably will. I suspect that that's the fight that they will make. And it'll be, what, after Ramadan, right? Something like that?
Yeah, well, he said they actually offered him the first Paramount headliner in January, and Habib shut it down. He said, we're not doing that. But yeah. Islam was, like, down. He wanted to do it, apparently, and he said it was between Usman and Ian Garry.
Wow. Well, Habib was right. I mean, they could give it to Ian Garry. To me, he's the most deserving. But to me, that's not a very mysterious fight. I think Islam basically beats him everywhere. So, yeah, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I'll stick with Michael Morales. That's who I've been kind of pushing for and said the most interesting fight to me since the night Islam won. We'll see what ends up happening there. Okay, my number one was UFC 320, Ankalaev versus Pereira 2. And granted, I'll say, like, I was cage side for most of these. I think I missed three. And I don't always watch them back, like watch the broadcast back. And, you know, so it's my perspective sitting there, which is probably a little different from yours at home. So just noting that. But yeah, I mean, Joe Pyfer opens the main card with a sub. Yusuf Zalal puts away Josh Emmett in 90 seconds. Yuri Prohazka is maybe the comeback of the year, one of them against Khalil Roundtree. Marab, you know, has one of his title defenses. I thought that was a pretty entertaining five rounder. And then not the, like, you know, most flashy finish in the world, but to see Pereira go out there and Ankalaev streak and take that belt back was a pretty significant moment in the year and in the sport and everything. So I thought that kind of just had a little bit of it all. You get two knockouts, two submissions, and then a pretty good five round title fight. So that was number one for me.
Yeah. One of the most pronounced main event moments of the year, right? Mm-hmm. Where you just stomped a mud hole in him. That was big. And also remember, there was like, Pereira was like, oh, he was this big star. And then he loses.
I didn't think he was going to win.
I didn't think he was going to win, and the star power kind of faded, and then it came roaring back. UFC had to be thrilled with that, yeah?
Yeah, and what a setup. You know, who knows what's next for Pereira, but some big options for him in 2026. So they needed him to win, and he needed that win. I thought it was a great capper to a great night there. Okay, number two, who did you have?
Again, there's a problem with this card, but I'm kind of weighing them.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
A little bit differently here. Here, the main event delivered. The co-main did not, but the main event, super to me, over-delivered. Two other fights on the main card delivered, and the opener did not. So this is also potentially recency bias. In fact, what's really lifting this for me is just the insane quality of the main event. It's UFC 323. That main event performance is so strong that I'm willing to look the other way on a co-main event that obviously is no one's fault, but it didn't deliver. It was anticlimactic. And then the main card opener was, you know, fine. It being a draw is not a problem per se. The problem was Guskov didn't rise to the occasion and Blachowicz didn't overcome the odds. So it's like, it just kind of was. But I won't repeat myself anymore. I'll just say that main event to me is so special that I just try to feel like what night ended where I had like some of the most positive feeling about it. And this would be a big one for me.
Yeah, I had UFC 323 ranked pretty highly. We'll get to that on my end, but very good choice. It has a lot to do with how the night ends. And yeah, you had one on your main or your number one. The night ended in many people's minds, not in the most entertaining way, but how could you not be thrilled with this? So yeah, that was a great card to watch. I mean, I'm just replaying it through my mind from being there Saturday, and that was thoroughly entertaining from pretty much the whole night, but certainly the main card. So yeah, disappointing end to that co-main though. At number two for me, might have a big disparity on this. I did have the first card of the year, UFC 311, out there at the Intuit Dome, the newly opened one in LA there. I thought, yeah, that was just a good night. You get a quick heavyweight finish in the main card opener between Jailton Almeida and Sergey Spivak. Another great Yuri Prohashka fight. Maybe Yuri Prohashka elevating both of these in the rankings all by himself, but to come back against Jamal Hill. I thought Marab and Umar haven't done my fight of the year rankings, but I suspect that'll find its way in the top five. And then Islam Makhachev, you know, going out there and just thoroughly dismantling of Moicano, doing the best he could in that moment. So I thought it was pretty good. Oh yeah, then we had Renier DeRitter kind of have his breakthrough moment against Kevin Holland to open that main card. So yeah, you get all four bonuses on the main card, fight of the night and two performances of the night. Like, don't know how much more you can ask for.
Well, I'll say this. The next three choices that I have, A, includes that card. And also, you know, any of these could probably also be, if not number one, at least number two. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it speaks to some of my individual choices here, but that's a great card. The problem for me was that main event was so, like, it did nothing for me.
It just felt like an inevitable conclusion.
I respect Moicano stepping up, but dude, Islam is, you know, you like Volk can't beat him on short notice, much less, you know, I realize that Moicano is bigger, but you know what I mean? Like Islam is so good that I'm seriously asking this. Is there a fighter alive who could fight him, beat him on 2 weeks notice? I don't think so. Not within the range of people within not like a heavyweight or something.
Probably not. Man.
You can't fight him that way. And so to me, it was like, this is, you know,
is this your number 1A without question if he did that to Armin Sarukian on that same night, finishing in the first round?
Without a shadow of a doubt. And Marab also overcoming like an early deficit to Umar was amazing, you know. And I thought Marab was going to lose that fight. You know, so for me, that was like, holy shit, Merab, that was impressive, right?
Yeah, very impressive. I'm interested to see if we align on number three here. What did you have?
UFC 317.
Oh, okay, we didn't.
No?
No, but it's close. Close.
Here, let me pull my notes up here for just a second. UFC 317, the reason I picked this one is because the main event to me was, I'm going to put a heavy emphasis on main event quality or not. You can see that drives a lot of my decision making.
Yep.
But Topuria stepping up and just completely icing him like that was insane. Like one of the, for me, funnest moments of the year. Obviously, sad for Charles. We all like Charles, but that to me was just.
He said on the show he was going to send Charles's head into orbit, and he
and in the first round, and you're like, dude, who the fuck is this guy? I think he is. I thought he was going to win, but I didn't think he was going to win like that. And then he just goes and beats the bags off of him. Pantoja just makes short work basically of Kai Kara France. There is the fight of the year contender you mentioned, certainly one of the on the bonus winners on that night, I believe, Van and Royval. Dariush and Moicano, you know, fun, spirited contest. And also on the card, you can just talk about later, but it was, you know, Peyton Talbot and Felipe Lima. He got back to work after that terrible showing against Jaime Barcelos and obviously made really good use of it against Cejudo. So, but to me, that main event was like history in the making in a way, you know?
Yeah, it's clearly valuable moments to have those double champs per se, or at least, you know, get to see Islam and Ilya throughout this year to put those two belts over their shoulders inside the octagon. And yeah, obviously this is as spectacular as you can get for International Fight Week as well. Yeah, pretty much everything they could have possibly asked for. So yeah, that was certainly one of the best. I have it up there as well, but I do not have it at my number three. I gave number three to UFC 319 out there in Chicago. Probably main event takes a big hit on this one, but I was able to overlook that for the Lerone Murphy spinning elbow on Aaron Pico, the Carlos Prochus spinning elbow on Jeff Neal, MVP and Cannonier. I didn't think that was as bad of a fight as some people painted it out to be. I thought it was pretty captivated. And then Tim Elliott gets a nice sub in the opener in pretty solid action. And yeah, I really enjoyed that week in Chicago too. Haven't been there ever. So
I don't want to spoil my analysis on this because, I fucking hated that main event. it was, I had a whole media cycle about it. I did. I was on Demetrius Johnson's channel and we were debating about it. Like I respect how good Khamzat is. There's simply no question about it, but I loathed that performance.
So someone's going to ask you, or who listens to what we've said so far, and say, how do you have Islam's performance at number one and this, you know, hurt it so badly? Obviously not the same fight. There were different fights and different performances, but if you wanted to paint things with a similar brush, I guess maybe you could.
Because you know what? It's a great question. Let me save it for when we get to 320.
Okay.
For me, which we're not far.
I was going to say you have it last.
no. It takes, or 319, excuse me. It takes a hit, but yeah, I'll save it for that.
The UFC thought it was performance of the night worthy, Luke. You got
in a way it was, right? I mean, if I had said, was there a clear winner? So like there's no judging, you know, issues or ref issues. Nope. None of that. Was there a clear winner? Sure. Was there domination throughout? Absolutely. You'd be like, all right, how bad could it have been? I hated that fight.
So if you put Islam Jack on this card instead, and it's the same everything out, you get the spinning elbows. Is this your number one then? Probably.
Yeah, that's probably number one. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. All right. So I did three there. Four.
I'm at four.
I'll go to four for me because you said this one already. I had UFC 323 there, so that was you know, still made it in my top four. You had it higher at two, and yeah, I mean, what more can you say? You said all Peyton Talbot and Henry Cejudo is a banger. Henry Cejudo went out, you know, on one of the better retirements I can remember, especially, you know, on a loss. So that was fine. You get the bonuses, all that. You wanted to say something on Peyton Talbot though?
No. I echo your sentiments.
Yeah. No. And I will say on Henry Cejudo, I mean, I remember distinctly when I moved to New York for that summer and I was hanging out with you a few times and you said to me like, do you know who this Henry Cejudo guy is? And he hadn't even had any MMA fights or whatever. like, no, I've never heard of him. And you were like angry at me. You're like, you need to go do your research on this guy. Like, he's getting some Golden Gloves hands. Like, he was an Olympic gold medalist. Like, you were giving me all the dirt on him. So it's kind of interesting that I can recall talking to you about this guy before his career even began. And
yeah, look at me now.
I'm talking at the end of it after he was a two division champion. It's crazy. Yeah,
I've been around a while. I'm now aging like it's a contest.
Okay, who do you have at four for you?
320, UFC 320, which is one of the ones you liked a lot. Again, this was the Poatan Uncle Live rematch. Merab beating Corey was, we didn't really talk much about it, but that again was so impressive because I think Corey, I thought if he was going to win it, it was going to be that night. He looked as prepared as I'd ever seen him, as in belief of his own capabilities I've ever seen him. And then Merab, you know, Merab fucked him up. Merab beat him up. The Yuri fight against Khalil, what more can you say? Yusuf Zalal, that was a vicious arm. Well, it was a quick arm bar anyway on Josh Emmett.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
And as you mentioned, Joe Pyfer opening up with the face crank on Abus. So that was fun.
Go back to back. Give me your five as well.
My five is going to be the one you liked a little bit higher, UFC 311, the opener for the year. Great card. Again, for me, what weighs more heavily is that main event, and I just hated it. Well, I didn't hate a main event, but you were taking the best that you had, obviously, given the circumstances. Really disappointed because, as we all know, Saryukin gave Islam a really tough fight their first time out. So I hope there's a chance to run that back at some point in the future. Probably not at this point, but in any event, I loved it in general, a lot to like anyway, but that main event killed me.
Yeah, it was a great card, but it sucks that you think back at that and you just, the biggest thing that comes to mind is Armin Sarukian and the missed opportunity, because here we are pretty much a year later and we're still dealing with the aftermath of it, even as recently as till Saturday when I asked Dana White about it. And it was just like, okay, and that wasn't even my question, just be like, have him rant. I just wanted to be like, what are you going to do with this guy next? Because clearly two lightweight title fights need to happen before he's even going to get a shot. We need the interim fight and then the unifier. So he's got to do something in between that. And
you think he gets, let me ask you, you think he gets the Max Oliveira winner?
No, hell no.
No? Who are they going to give that to?
I don't think they want to put him in a fight like that. I would be surprised. And again, when's the winner of that ready? June, July, if they beat the hell out of each other, like that fight's at the beginning of March. That's four months.
Jesus, right. Yeah.
3 months away. Like if I'm him, I'm trying to fight on that card in case something happens. Or like, you know, he's probably going to have to fight. I mean, all these guys are booked now. I was thinking like BSD might be good, but it might be Gamrot off a loss, which is the fight he should have taken last year. They offered that to him in the Abu Dhabi main event. I think, I can't remember who ended up fighting that one, but yeah, he didn't want to do it.
Well, here we are. Good luck to him.
Yeah. What do you, he's just going to have to take fights. I think it's a tough spot. So
Jesus.
Is what it is. Okay, so that's your five. I did say my five. No, I didn't. I had UFC 317 at
okay.
So yeah, we had the Ilya moment, the fight of the year, Pantoja dominance. It was all very good. So I'll go into my six there before I toss it to you. Pretty similar top fives though. I had UFC 314 down there in Miami, Volkanovski versus Lopez 2. That was a good card. We had a nice title fight main event between Volk and Lopez that we'll get to see all over again in a few short weeks, Luke. Had a vicious KO by Dominic Reyes, submission of the year candidate by John Silva against Bryce Mitchell. The Yair Rodriguez pitbull fight was kind of ho-hum, but I thought it was a great card overall and a nice time in Miami.
And was the UFC debut of Pitbull, right?
It was, yes.
So there was some kind of value there as well, some additional intrigue. Now we're starting to get a little more closely aligned. Because I don't have it for this slot, but I have it for the next one.
Okay.
I don't know if you want me to say it or not.
Like where your UFC 314 is?
No.
Or your six?
My six.
Yeah, give me your six.
All right. For my six, I have UFC 319. So okay. I still ranked it closer to the, you know, a little bit in the better half, at the bottom of the better half. Let me tell you why I hated that main event. And people are like, oh, it's the same as the Islam fight. No, it's not. No, it's not. I will meet the audience halfway on this. Like I said, I'm not trying to lecture everyone about it because you just can't anymore. People are going to like what they're going to like. You have to live with it. Yeah. But you can't just say things like, oh, they're the same, because they're not. And the reason why they're not is because for any number of reasons, for example, Islam going for submissions, you know, more often and threatening them had such a pronounced impact on Jack De La Maddalena's movement, right? He was being faced with offensive dilemmas. If you roll to your back, you could potentially give up the pass. I know there's some question about how much they were trying to do that, but it was part of it. Or you could roll to your side, and then you're just going to get darced. And he was constantly navigating this position. But it's really not even that necessarily. If you go back and you watch, for Islam to do anything in the grappling context, he met immediate and consistent friction. Right, there was every inch he had to fight hard for. Part of it, he wanted to play a little bit of a static game, but there were also clear times where he's threatening to advance position. And Jack is, in fact, I think what he was doing was intentional. Mike, he was trying to show like he was passing to get JDM to react defensively in a way that he wanted. Yeah. Right, but there was this a lot of cat and mouse that was happening in those spaces, dude. Hamzat was able to pass to mount immediately whenever he wanted. And here's the problem with the control position style that he was doing. The whole point of advancing position is that it puts your opponent, if you're good, in greater degrees of peril. As he's moving, his ground and pound does not improve, and there's no real submission threat to be accounted for basically anywhere in that entire performance. So it's literally just camping out in an advanced position where nothing else can happen there. Right. No, that is absolutely not the same as what happened between Islam and JDM. Not even close. The level of resistance that Hamzat faced was, I mean, negligible relative to what JDM had, or excuse me, I should say what Islam had with JDM. He was able to achieve camping out positions and where nothing else could happen for long stretches. It's like, dude, if you're that much better than the guy, it is incumbent upon you to take a little bit of risk, because how much risk are you actually accepting? He can't do anything to you. And he didn't do that. And I hated it for that reason.
That's true. I can't disagree with any of that. The only thing that, you know, and fans won't want to hear this, but being in the sport as long as we have, like, guys in that position can't really knock them too hard if they get minimal resistance and just take it to the end when you have such a clear winning path in a title fight after you've been through so much, like, to get that title opportunity. It's tough, but yeah, the true greats put their stuff on top of that and are able to put an exclamation mark on that.
Listen to what I'm saying exactly. I'm saying I don't like the fight. I didn't say Hamzat's bad.
No.
Hamzat is extremely skilled, which is really the part that drives me kind of nuts. It's like, I know he's got more in the tank, but you're playing a strategic game where you reach a position without much resistance, and once you're there, you can't do anything. That's why am I supposed to say that that is something that is interesting? It is not. Whereas with Islam, he had to play a game of tension where he's making essentially JDM juggle all the time and then wearing him out or trying to find, you know, different opportunities therein. He was looking for that darst the whole time, I think, among some of the things. These are not equivalent performances, not even close. So if people just zoom out and they say, well, hey, I didn't like either of them. Okay, I get it. It's not for everybody. And I will say, Hamzat and JDM kind of require, Hamzat and Islam, they kind of require you to have, not that I'm an expert, far from it, but if you're just a casual, which is the biggest audience that we have in terms of proportion of MMA fans, if it requires you to have like a high degree of literacy to even follow what the hell is happening, that's obviously an impediment to the sport, right? We can all agree on that. I just feel like when people equate the two, I hate that.
I understand that. And I think that's fair and well said as well. So we'll see if there's more of those performances to come from Hamzat. What do you think? Is there a lot more action you can take in grappling exchanges with Nassourdine Imamov?
Well, I mean, I'm a little, I mean, I think the cat's out of the bag. Like, you know what the game plan is. If he can, he can just do this to you if you let him, right? Which is a problem. I don't think he's going to have as much success doing this going forward because people are just going to know he can get to there and he can hold it. And again, part of the rules are that you're supposed to constantly try and attempt to finish, right? You've seen that in the rules. That's why another reason why that camping out to me is such a problem. Islam has got a constant submission halo hanging over these moments in large part. That's not necessarily the case, or even with ground and pound, with Khamzat. I forgot what the fucking question was. I was just going on another one of these stupid rants.
It was, do you think if Khamzat gets him, Nasser Dinimavov in those similar positions?
He might try some of it, and he might get some of it, and he might get, and by the way, he also might get better at it. People are asking, what kind of ground and pound can you have for mounted crucifix? Mike, you've seen this. Matt Hughes was vicious from that position. He could bounce your head off of the canvas from that position. So there are people who are really nasty from there. He might just get better at it. So I'm actually not worried about Khamzat, like, oh, is this the new guy now? No, maybe he goes back to this. Maybe it's a part, but I don't think it's going to define his fighting future. I really don't.
Well, the Khamzat title reign story is one of the big things to watch for me in 2026. I mean, he's already picked up an injury. We're not going to see him until after Ramadan. And then he's doing some media with Brett Okamoto saying he doesn't really want to fight Nasser Dinimavov because of, like, you know, their backgrounds. And then he wants to move up after one title defense. Like, if we're sitting around and we don't get this guy till Abu Dhabi 2026, not going to be thrilled.
Was it Dean Thomas on your show here who said about him, oh, you know, if he wins, it's going to be a problem
for the UFC.
Yeah. And he got, Dean got murdered for it. He did. I'm like, I don't know, y'all. That's not looking like the craziest prediction right now. I'll just say that.
It's not gone great so far. So we'll see what happens. I think if we don't see him by May, we have a huge problem. So we'll see what happens there.
Agreed with that. Yes.
Okay. So back to it. Number 7. What did you have there?
Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. UFC 314, the Volk Miami card. The main events tend to be very defining for me. Really like the main event, especially for the story of Volk getting back to business. But Diego Lopez not ever being able to cut off the cage was insane to watch. I'm being dead serious. Like, I was like,
I know,
I
agree. You're saying, like, not watching it.
I was like, bro, I was like, you have all these other skills. They're really good. How do you not have something as foundational as that? So I guess part of the reason why I kind of want to see the rematch is, like, you know, it's kind of funny, right? People are like, oh, how different could the rematch be? Actually, the rematch could be really different. And the reason why is because there was a gigantic problem with the first one that I'm not saying one camp can easily fix, but it's one of those ones where if you tighten up a foundational element of fighting, the downstream consequences are vast. So it's like, this is our huge area of need that they can make a lot of progress in. I don't know. Could prove quite useful for his chances, you know?
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's going to be interesting. Volk is only a year older and, you know, wanting to fight sooner. So I'm very curious to see how this goes. And if Volk loses, is it his last one? And does he go out there? Even with a win, I could see it happening too. So
yes,
that's coming up early 2026 there, UFC 325. At number 7 for me, I had UFC 313, Pereira versus Ankalaev 1. To be solid card, we had a KO of the year contender with Mauricio Hufi and Bobby Green. That's a pretty awesome way to kick off your main card. Amanda Lemos and Yasmin Lucindo is, you know, okay, whatever. Ignacio Bahamundes finishes, retires Jalen Turner for a few months, gets a performance bonus there. Justin Gaethje and Fazeev, another fight of the night from Justin Gaethje. The main event was not very good, but I thought it was at least fascinating. Alex Pereira's out there killing everyone. Megaman Ankalaev was giving him a fight. It was clear it was not going perfectly for him. So, you know, that's a big title change and a big upset, if you wanted to call that at the time. I mean, I know it was a pretty close odds-wise, but still, you know, people were not seeing Pereira really losing much going into that fight. So we're getting to the bottom half here. I thought, for what it was a middle of the pack type of event.
I basically agree. If I may, it's because that's my number 8.
Okay.
So we're pretty close here, middle through. I generally agree. And again, for me, the main event, like, you know, that fight was over. You're like, dude, what the hell was that? That was terrible. That was terrible. That, I mean, and again, not even because, like, well, some fights are good, some fights are bad. Sure. but Poatan looked like a cheap version of himself, you know, like you didn't even, hey, if he fought and lost, like, you know, that's just, hey, that's fighting, whatever. But he just looked, you know, it was the Michael Jordan flu game, except without the
winning. I literally scratched my head. It was a head scratcher.
Yeah.
That wasn't even intentional. Yeah.
So I hated it. I hated it.
I agree. Yeah. It was not the best, but you got a KO of the year contender. I guess it makes the middle of the list. So at number eight, you're probably going to be pissed at me for this one because this is a big disparity. I had UFC 322 there, which feels a little low now that I'm looking back, but yeah. I know
tell me why your initial reaction was to put it down there.
I think it was probably just because of the title fights and the lack of, you know, thrillers in that regard. I mean, we did get all the finishes, but yeah, maybe I just kind of slid it down there for those two reasons, because the title fights were just so one-sided and didn't have that many exciting moments. The other knockouts and everything made up for it, but yeah, maybe I could have switched this to like six or five, but I don't think it's breaking my top five. I'll say that. If I remedied the order.
Wait, did I mess up my order here? What if I told you was my answers?
So, quick recap here. Luke had UFC 322 at one, UFC 323 at two, UFC 317 at three, mm-hmm. UFC 320 at four, UFC 311 at five, UFC 319 at six,
okay.
UFC 314 at seven, and UFC 313 at eight.
We didn't talk much about 319. This is right. I'm sorry. I'm losing my mind here a little bit.
You're good. You're a little under the weather today, Luke. Yeah. So we appreciate you bearing with us.
It's quite all right.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, that's probably the biggest discrepancy we'll have on our list, but it was close. I tried to give them like a little out of 10 ranking there to make it easier to put together my list. I had this at a 7.9 and there was four other ones that were like 8.1 to 8.2. So it was just there. It could have found its way up to six. Okay, so you had eight. Number nine.
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, for nine. Okay, card was dreadful, but the main event to me really over delivered. And I actually heard sold much better than people realize. I'm gonna say UFC 318. I fucking loved the main event between Max Holloway and Dustin Poirier for a couple of reasons. Obviously Max had lost to him twice. And then I thought was clearly the better guy. I mean, he won obviously, but I'm saying like visually just looked like he was the one in command, certainly down the stretch. It was a retirement opportunity for Dustin Poirier down there in Louisiana and New Orleans. What is not to love about that? And one thing I really said about that fight during that time, Mike, was, you know, we don't have to make a big point of it, but I'll just say very quickly, it seems like there's not a lot of gentlemen left in the fight game, and this was a case where we got to celebrate two of them on the same night, and they had a rivalry, and the fight was good, and Max, you know, I think getting back to top form back at 55 obviously was, you know, critical for him and his career, and how there was just so much I loved about that main event. So for me, I can overlook a lot of parts of the rest of that card that were like sensational, really important main event. The reason why it's a little bit lower, obviously, is because the main event is so great and then the rest of the card is not.
Yeah, one of two main cards with no bonuses was UFC
318. Wow.
So we'll get to the other one, but yeah, I've had it obviously on the bottom half there as well. I had it slightly lower, but as far as events to cover, that was my number one of the year because it was awesome to be down there. I mean, I've obviously had a very long relationship with Dustin Poirier, getting to cover his final fight, him having me into his house after the day after to like do a podcast and hang out with his friends and family and stuff was very cool. Gave me all, you know, the war hat and stuff that stays on the set. So yeah, can't hate on that, and was led to him being a very regular co-host on this podcast. So only good memories of the Dustin Poirier retirement fight, but I had a little lower. For my number nine, I had UFC 316 out there in beautiful Newark, a place I know Luke has very fond feelings for. Yeah, I got to stay at that hotel that was in Penn Station there.
The Hilton?
Yes.
Yeah, across the three. Bro, I've seen homeless people shave their pubic hair in the bathrooms in places like these. You know what I'm saying? Yes. What I'm
saying? I would not be surprised. But yeah, solid card, just didn't rise to the level of some other ones. But obviously, Merab submitting Sean O'Malley in the main event, solid. Kayla Harrison, her crowning moment against Juliana Pena, a big moment for her. But then the rest, you know, Duff or Pfeiffer and Gaslam, meh. Batista and Mix, meh. And Kevin Holland, you know, beats Vicente Luque, but Kevin Holland's on half these cards we've talked about.
So yeah, he is.
It doesn't really change the fortunes of it one way or another.
Here's my message.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
So the people of Newark, if you live there, just move. Just leave.
There you go. From Luke Thomas. Yeah. What did you have at 9?
UFC 316.
Okay. There we go. Finally, this is the first one. I think we're on the same page.
Yeah, so. UFC 316. That, I mean, I did like that Merab kind of overperformed by stopping Sugar.
Sure.
But that fight shouldn't have happened. And I mean, it just straight up shouldn't have happened. I mean, good for Merab. He performed ably. But and then the co-main to me really had not much mystery, to be honest with you. Cool for Kayla to do as well as she did. Again, it had some cool, like, triumphant moments, in, if you really knew the context. But, you know, not my favorite, I'll say that much.
Yeah, man. Yeah, these June cards just never hit too well, especially when they do two pay-per-views in June now that they move International Fight Week up a little bit earlier. We'll see if that stays in the Paramount era. But yeah, nothing crazy. The title fights were good enough. That keeps it in the top 10 for me, but just by a touch. Do you think, you mentioned Sean O'Malley shouldn't have been in that fight. Are we going to get another Sean O'Malley title fight sooner than later here? Obviously, Song Yadong, no joke. Did not like Sean O'Malley's behavior in the face-off there, but that's a whole different story. But I don't know, if he wins, are they gonna do this fight?
I will say this. I mean, you got Umar there on that card too.
Yeah.
Although he's on the prelims. Like,
does it matter anymore? I wonder. Like,
I don't think it matters as like a question. Thing. Yeah. I don't think it matters as like a question of like, oh, you can't get a big opportunity from that. Rather, it's like kind of how the UFC sees them, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'll say this. If O'Malley somehow stops Song Yadong, I would be surprised if he didn't get a title shot. If he just straight up beats him, even then you might like his chances, but I wouldn't guarantee it. But if he stops him, yeah, he's going to get it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we shall see. Merab Dvalishvili, I think, saying in an interview as of a few hours ago of this recording that UFC said, take your time, rest, recover, and you're fighting Yon when you get back. But that remains to be seen. But who knows? There's videos and photos out there of Hunter Campbell at Merab's after party, like giving him hugs and stuff. So who knows what's going on there relationship-wise. And, you know, he did a lot for them this year. So he certainly deserves it. But I just wonder what the other options in play if Merab will get it. Okay, rounding out my top 10 is UFC 318, Holloway versus Poirier 3. As I said, they're not the greatest card. No bonuses for the main card. Poirier versus Holloway was a solid fight. I was as captivated as any, just because of those guys being who they are. The D-Rod fight against who? Kevin Holland was not too bad there either. But other than that, yeah, it gets the lowest spot in my top 10. So that's that for UFC 318. What did you have at 10?
All right, let me pull up my notes here on this part. All right, for number 10. There he is. Okay, this part. UFC 321. Yeah, this card was bad. This was bad. Yeah. Now, it didn't have to go this way, but Bad, you know, bad, relatively speaking. I hope everyone.
No, it was. I'm surprised you didn't have it lower. I'm kind of shocked that you gave this top 10 prestige.
So for a couple of reasons, I like the Mirzakhanov. He's an interesting guy to me. Umar against Mario. Now, here's the thing about this fight. Mario is hard to look good against. You can beat him, but he's a tough ass assignment. People were shitting on him because they didn't like the nature of the way he beat Aldo or whatever, but he's a good fighter, like a very good fighter. And like Umar had his hands full with him. Also, the reason why I kind of appreciate this fight is I feel like you know, it's kind of interesting. Someone mentioned this to me and I believed it, but now like even I can see it even more. If you look at like the Abdul-Manap camp, there's like Islam and Habib, like these are like the really high achievers. Like I think a step below that would be Usman and Umar. And then below that is kind of like the rest of the donks. Well, it's true, right? Like those are like the four big ones. I mean, there's other ones than that, but those are the four big ones.
John Park's coming.
There can be new entrants, but they got to prove it first, right?
Sure, of course.
But what I'm trying to say is some of the things that I did not like about Usman's game in the rematch with Paul Hughes, I saw a lot of it in this one. Like I actually learned a lot about Umar. So I felt like, again, like what did I get from it? I saw Umar as both a high achiever, but that I really saw his limits, even in ways that I didn't necessarily see them in the Merab fight. So to me, that was quite helpful. And, you know, Mackenzie Dern kind of fulfilling it on the back end is, it was nice to see. It was nice to see. The main event was an unmitigated fucking disaster. So let's just call what it was, right?
Yes, it was very, very bad. We'll talk more on that when I get to it on my list. But yeah, rough event out there in Abu Dhabi. That's all I'll say about that for the moment. Go back to back. Give me 11 here.
Okay, 11. One more second here. Let me see here. Okay. So for my other one, this is number 11. UFC 315. UFC 315. UFC 315 has one part of it that maybe two parts that I really like. The main event. This was the best Jack De La Maddalena performance I've ever seen. I mean, he just did a phenomenal job. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, Bilal didn't shoot enough. There is something to be said for that. But what the real truth is that this is what was so funny about it. This is why this fight was fool's gold, though, a little bit, though, Mike, if I could be honest. Because before the JDM fight with Bilal, there was the JDM fight with Gilbert. Mm-hmm. And in that fight, what did you notice? Gilbert would take him down, and it would be JDM who would have to scramble or get back to his feet. But he didn't do a really good job of like down blocking or stopping the takedown at the point of the attack. He more like would just get taken down and have to kind of, you know, get back up. But against Bilal, yes, he had to do a little bit of that. But he showed for the first time he could down block. He could get, you know, underhooks. He could sprawl and like stop the takedown before it even started. And I was like, oh, this is it. This is what you need to fight Islam. You know what I mean? Like, this is the thing. That's why I was like so intrigued heading into the Islam fight. I was like, if he hadn't shown me that, I wouldn't have believed he had any shot. And then he didn't do any of that shit against Islam, which is, you know, I mean, I don't know what to say about it, but at least for that night, I was like that. I just love watching fighters. And I know you are the same. I love watching them fulfill potential. I love it when like big pieces get solved in their games. And that felt like that to me that night. The rest of the card, that co-main tested me. I was like, what have I done with my life watching this, you know?
Yeah, it's not one to remember. I mean, Jose Aldo, his final fight is on that one as well against Ayman Zahabi. You could argue
And shouts to Ayman. He fought as best he could. He got the win. That's fighting. Fair enough. But just for Jose Aldo to go out like that was like, it felt so. And then they did the walk. Where did they do the walkout recently? Where was that?
That was at the Rio card.
Charles. That's right. Yeah. So they did that for him, which was nice to see, but I was like, golly, man.
You know? Okay, so here's a redeeming part, maybe, of UFC 315. I'll pose this question to you because I asked some people because I was genuinely wondering. It's Natalia Silva versus Alexa Grasso, the women's fight of the year.
Holy shit. And
if so, can you name a better one?
Dude, you don't have to. Women's MMA is in trouble, bro.
And not, yeah.
Wow.
Someone posed that to me. They're like, that might be the women's fight of the year. I was like, you might be right. And that's not a good thing.
That's crazy. Dude, I hadn't even thought of it like that. That's crazy. That wasn't a bad fight. It was a good fight.
Yeah, it was fine. But
it's like, just like any other thing. Yeah.
Nothing. So,
oh my God.
Chew on that for a bit, Luke, and the other people out there listening. Send me your candidates for a superior option. Okay, number 11, or that was 11 for both of us. Yes, it was 11 for both of us. Number 12, I'll let you go here because I'm interested.
So I did 315. Yeah, so this would be UFC 312.
Okay.
Which was Basura. I mean, let's just be honest about that. That main event, good for Drickus, you know, but Strickland, again, I don't care if guys win and lose, but you at least want to see them be themselves, right? We talked about the Poatan fight, the first one against Ankalaev, where he just looked like crap. Strickland didn't look like Strickland, honestly. And again, is that partly credit to DDP? Yes, of course. But I don't know. He just seemed off, and it didn't produce, not that you were necessarily expecting the world, but you didn't even get what he can do well, right? That's, again, that's the part that kind of kills me. I fucking hated that main event. The Zhang Weili, Tatiana Suarez one was impressive to me, but it kind of broke my heart because Suarez is still in it, right? She still might actually get a title shot. But that night I was like, man, that was one of the first times I ever was like, man, all those injuries, all that time off, it really did mess with her ability to develop. You know, she got really good, and then I just couldn't get better as a consequence. Taoshin Teixeira versus Justin Taffa, why the fuck was that on a main card? Jimmy Crute versus Rodolfo Belotto, why the fuck was that on a main card and also a draw? And then once again, Jake Matthews versus Francisco Prado. This doesn't even deserve to headline the prelims, much less be on the main. It was an Australia card. I get it. You know,
it was.
Yeah, no thanks.
So I was wondering if you were going to have this last or second to last, because do you know it was our last place event in 2024?
No.
It was Duplessis versus Strickland 1.
Was it really?
It was. So yes. I was wondering if it was going to be back-to-back as the worst event of the year. Get some saving grace. I bumped it up. I guess I'm trying to do like, what is bringing this up? What is redeeming for this card? I guess it got it out of the last slot for me because if you want to see Sean Strickland bleed and get beat up, I guess you got your wish with this fight. So maybe some people out there took some joy out of that. But other than that, everything you said on point, terrible, not good. So that was that. That leaves the obvious one. What did you have at 13?
I'm trying to see which one I missed.
Yeah. Which one did you miss here?
I don't know. I've got 311, 312, 313, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, right? Yes. 19, 20, 21. Did I skip 321? Did I skip 321?
321 at 10.
2, 3, 4. All right. Wait, hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So I've got 322, 323,
yep.
317, 320, yep. 311, 319, 314, 313, 318, 316.
Yeah, that's where I messed up.
Oh, okay. 321, 315, 312.
Okay, yeah. 318, 3. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So that was my fault there. I ruined the anticipation. Sorry, everyone, but we'll close it out with what I had to
say.
Did
I miss 316? No, I thought we talked about it.
No, we did. I just accidentally didn't write it down properly.
When Okay.
So as I was setting you up, I kind of messed it up there, but yes.
That is so funny that we picked those two fights in back-to-back fucking years. And the first one was
actually, so I did have 321 as last, but it was very close. I was close to, I moved it slightly above just because, man, what can you say about how bad that ending to the main event
was? Bad.
Like it never happened like that. I'm sure over there it was an even worse disaster. Like first time in years they haven't had Islam Makhachev, Khamzat Chimaev, Khabib Nurmagomedov on that Abu Dhabi October pay-per-view. They went a different direction with Tom because he wanted to be there over Vegas, and just for a 10 like that. And I mean, even the one highlight you got there with Mirzakhanov, like it's a grazing kind of weird knockout. It's not some violent, you know, like super bad faceplant type thing, right? So like the one highlight you got, even get, it's kind of like a,
yeah, but like also like kind of so, like not that I'm happy that Rakic lost, but
Yeah, he's on a three-fight losing streak.
Yeah, it was a pivotal loss. It was a pivotal loss.
Yeah, and I mean, even the Mackenzie Dern Verna fight, you spoke nicely on it. Happy for those ladies, but like the shadow of Zhang Lali was looming over it, and even more so now, in my opinion. It just feels like I won't go full Dean Thomas again and call it the most insignificant title fight or whatever he said, but like
Let me defend Dean. I love Dean. He's hilarious. And the reason why he's important is if you cover boxing long enough, what you discover is that relative to MMA, boxing has way more old men. And as you well understand, old men don't give a fuck what you think. They don't care at all, dude. And so in boxing, like people just like, you know, they'll just say like wild shit about each other because like even powerful people, like because they don't care. Yeah. You need more old men to tell you what the truth is. And Dean is an old bastard if ever there was one.
I love that. Good vouching for him. He always has a place here. I know some of his stuff rubs people the wrong way, but I think he's very important and he's been around the sport. He knows, you know, people as well as any of us. So respect to him. But geez, I guess we'll put a bow on this with 321's ending was kind of leads to a big storyline for 2026, right? Like, what the hell are we doing with Tom Aspinall? Dana White, you know, said more things about him the other night. I don't think it was very satisfactory answers, but I don't know. He's at least he didn't double down this time, so that's something for Tom. But I worry for him and the condition of those eyes and what impact this is going to have on the never-ending poop shoot that is the UFC heavyweight division.
just close it. Just close it.
It's so bad. Dude, merge light heavyweight and heavyweight. This is my thoughts. And make women's MMA 115 and then 126 and up. These are my
You could do that. Or you could just do 135 to 155, you know, just straight up. Let's get
the flyweights in there.
Yeah.
I want to see Rose versus Nunes.
Just make women's MMA bare knuckle, you know. Just make spice it up somehow, because holy fuck.
Yes. Well, okay, Luke, I think that brings our rankings to an end. hilarious that we had pretty much the same bottom fight. And yeah, if that's not a sign for the UFC, do not make Du Plessis versus Strickland 3 and headline it with a card. And put it in Canada or Australia. If you're going to do it, give it a real undercard, please. But yes, Luke, I appreciate it. What's your New Year's wish for MMA? What do you want the most in 2026 out of the sport?
I'll be honest, I don't feel like being greedy. Just them moving pay-per-views back to 9 p.m. has been a glorious development in my life. I don't have to pay for pay-per-views. Like, dude, I don't want to. I'm good player, you know what I mean?
Yeah, very fascinating year in 2025. The amount of title changes, crazy.
Like, yes, the title, you know, oh, you know what, I'll have one. Yeah, I would like to see guys stop leaving titles for other people to come pick up after they're done with them. I would like to see titles contested in fights and people have to defend what they have in their divisions. This used to be a common regularity and has become much less so. Let's get back to the things that make divisions great, which are contested battles for titles.
Well said, Luke. Well, Merry Christmas to you and the family. Happy New Year. Thank you for being back. And yeah, we'll talk to you sometime in Q1. We'll re-rank our most valuable fighters sometime in 2026 and see how that goes.
Sounds good.
All right, I'm going to take a quick break and I'll be right back to wrap things up. That does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thanks so much to Luke for his time. That was awesome. A whole lot of fun there. We covered a lot of ground, and especially thanks to him for doing so well a little bit under the weather today. Could barely tell. So thanks to Luke for keeping that energy and for his list. Who had more accurate? Please tell me. I'd love to know. Drop a comment, drop a thought, and that will do it for this show. Thank you to my man Kamikaze, Abhi Subban, as always, for producing. And I will just note that plan to have a show next week, but I'm going on my honeymoon on Monday, so I will be out of touch. I will not be planning to plug in much when I'm away with my beautiful wife there, so I plan to have a show that I drop in the interim. Hopefully it works out. Not trying to overpromise here, but if things go according to plan, I'll have something pretty cool and enjoyable to share with you all during my off week there, and then a lot of good stuff once I'm back and rocking towards the year end of the year and then into the new year. A long break here in the UFC schedule, so hopefully make it up to you guys with some fun end of year and looking ahead to 2026 content. But for now, that is it for this episode of the Bonfire. Appreciate all your support. Appreciate my bookie, Abhi, as well, once again. And until next week, I will see you all back here by the Bonfire.
Hey, AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.